Hello, everybody. Let's talk about principal languages. I think nobody has ever heard of them. So let's first begin with something less interesting with me. My name is Christian Rehn. I'm from Germany. I began to program in November 2001. I studied computer science, and I'm a moderator and editor at some German Delphi website. I'm employed at 1&1 Source Center. There's a big hoster and ISP in Germany. And this at the bottom, that's my blog. After the talk, I will post some notes there, maybe. Some organizational stuff. The slides don't contain very much text, so this is a bit better for the presentation, and if you want to have some more detailed material, there's some online which you can find on this URL. And as always with my presentation, I really appreciate if you give me any feedback on the slides, on the talk, on the topic, on my English, my presentation, my pronunciation, anything. Just give me feedback after the talk, or via email, or in the blog, or whatever. So this is what I'm talking about today. First I'll tell you a story, then when we come to principles and principal languages, and how this is connected, and how the principles are connected, and I've created a wiki, the principles wiki. You saw the URL slide before, and this is what I'll present in the end, and the very end I will tell you what's the advantages of these, and why I think this is interesting and maybe even helpful. So I promised to tell you a story. So remember the 5th of November. Okay, I guess you all know that story, so I'll maybe tell another one. So once upon a time, there was a 13-year-old child, and that child was me, and I needed to have a new hobby. So I got internet and decided to learn programming. And the first thing I've learned was QBasic, right? That's why my very first language, which I used about 3 weeks. And after these 3 weeks, I was tired about BASIC and switched to Turbo Pascal and later to Delphi. So this is how I got to Delphi, and after that I pretty much did anything. And some may say nothing really good, but actually I looked into several languages and technologies and anything, and I started to program. And you all know that the code you write in the first few years is, let's say, not the very best code. So what to do with bad code? You can throw it away, or alternatively you can use it as a bad example in your talks, and this is what I am doing. I am showing you a part of a program called BibDB, which was a small database application for the school library, and it's pretty much a mess. It's a total catastrophe. The code is almost unreadable and hardly maintainable, and a perfect example for how not to code. And it's good to have such a thing if you want to scare people in your talks. So this is roughly the basic, the central architectural idea. I have a central system class which is globally accessible, and it aggregates all the other important system parts and exposes them through a property. So the access to any method of your system parts is really, really easy. You just say system.systempart.someMethod, and you always have the possibility to get access. It's really, really easy, and I thought it was so good that I'm recommending this practice to others. But in the end, I didn't realize that it was a really, really bad idea. So this is what it looks like from a bird's perspective. There's the central system class here, and if you want to access, let's say, C2 from A1, you just say system give me C, and C give me C2, and then I can access the methods of C2. It looks really, really good, and it can be described very nicely, but actually it's a really bad idea. And the question is, why? Why is this a bad idea? I hadn't any clue why this was a bad idea. And through the time, I came to realize that it was bad, and I started thinking about it. What's the reason for that? How to assess that? And this is how I came to principles. So why? Or maybe I should elaborate the question. How to tell good solutions and bad solutions apart? What's the reasons behind that? One aspect of this question is quite important here. It's an analytic question. You can say it's about assessment of solutions. It's not about the generation of new solutions. Normally, we developers don't have any problems with coming up with new ideas. We always get some ideas, but some of them are good and some of them are less good, and we need to assess whether what we are thinking of now is a good solution and we can go with that, or whether we should think again and maybe come up with a different solution which could be better. Or when we have several solutions, maybe we come up with them ourselves, or maybe a colleague comes up with another solution, and then we have to decide which of these solutions we are thinking of is the best solution, the appropriate one in the specific context we are in now. So it's not about generating new solutions, new ideas, but about assessment. As I said, principles are the tool I found to make this assessment, and there are very, very many principles there. Some of them are really well known. You all know the KISS principle. Sorry, I haven't translated all the items here. The third one reads loose coupling, high cohesion. Maybe you also know this. These are also principles which are rather well-known. Dry, don't repeat yourself, is a very well-known principle. Solid, the solid principles are quite known, but there are also other principles which are only known in certain communities, which are only known in certain programming language communities, or only known to readers of certain books, or users of some library, or I don't know. So what I did is to think about where to get those principles and how do they interconnect. So let's first have a look what I think a principle is. In my opinion, a principle is a rule of thumb which tells good solutions from bad ones and limits itself to just one design aspect. So it makes reasoning about design easier by separating several aspects and giving them a name. So a principle is just a name or a rule of thumb. It's not a, a law which is cast in stone, rather a handy tool. And it's just limiting itself to one aspect, which means we always have to think about several principles, about several aspects, in order to get the whole picture. But let's have a look at some principle you might know. This is called Murphy's Law, which reads, whatever can go wrong will go wrong. It's really well known, but I don't think if you ever thought this was a kind of engineering advice. Normally it's thought as a anecdote, as a story which is funny, but not very helpful. It originates from a rocket sled project in the United States, and there were strain gauges, some sensors which measure which forces are there on a person which who is riding that rocket sled, and the assistant who fixed the sensors did all 16 of them wrong. So this is where the principle originates. It's just let's say it's just a story in the beginning, but then you can think of something. How can this principle help me to decide which is good and which is bad? So when this is true, when whatever can go wrong will go wrong, then this means that a solution which has fewer possibilities for something to go wrong, then this solution is better than another solution where there are more possibilities for something to go wrong. Because we are all humans, we all make mistakes, and in the long run, is the chance that every possibility for some fault will eventually result in a fault. So we should think about minimizing the possibilities for faults in our software. So this is how we can transform some story, some sentence to a principle, to an engineering advice. Let's make an interesting example here. It's an example from Java. I've taken the I've given the talk in several other occasions, and also some with a Java background. I left this example in here because it's a so compelling example how bad code can be. This is the constructor of the date class in Java. It's now deprecated, and there are reasons for that. You can maybe think about what this date represents, and I bet nobody of you has the correct solution in mind when he or she reads this. Actually, this is not the 12th of January 2013, but rather the 12th of February 3913. So there are several possibilities for something to go wrong here. First of all, the month value can be thought to be 1-based, but it's 0-based in Java. Secondly, you can put a 4-digit year here, as I did it here, and don't realize that it's a 2-digit year value required. And lastly, you can also mix up the parameters. You can switch them, and it looks okay, but it gives the wrong outcome. So there are several possibilities for something to go wrong here. So clearly, this is a really, really bad interface, a really, really bad constructor. With respect to what Murphy's Law says, with respect to failure possibilities. So this is one principle, but actually there are many principles, and as I've told you, you always need to think about several aspects, several principles, when you want to get the whole picture. The problem here is that principles are conflicting. What does that mean? Let's make an example here. Let's say you need the square root of 2 somewhere in your program. Then you have several possibilities on how to accomplish that. First of all, you can have a constant which just names the square root of 2. Secondly, you can have a function which computes the value square root of 2 at runtime. You can have a square root function, a power function. You know, the there's the possibility to compute square roots with a power function. And lastly, there is also the possibility to write a really, really powerful class which could be called T complex polynom root calculator, which calculates the roots of arbitrary complex polynoms. So what's the best solution here? Let's have a look at two principles. You all know the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid, which says a simple solution is always better than a complex solution. Another principle would be the generalization principle, which says a generalized solution, which is applicable to a wide range of problems, it's better than a very specific solution which is only applicable to a very special context. And we can see that the ideal solution would be up here in the top right corner. It would be totally general and totally easy. But life isn't that easy. There is no such perfect solution. So we have to make a trade-off, a compromise here. And all these solutions I've presented here are some compromise. There's one, the square root constant, which is really, really easy, but not very general. And the complex polynomial root calculator class is really, really general, but I guess nobody would think that this is an easy solution. So, as you can see, there are these solutions which are around here. They are the so-called Pareto optimum. There's no way to improve on one dimension without making another dimension worse, except for solution 2. You see, that's the function that computes just the square root of 2. Solution 1, the square root constant, is easier than the function, but it's but it's also not very general. The square root function is just as simple or complex than the square root of 2 function, but it's much more general. So solution 2, just having a function to compute the square root of 2, is a really bad idea. So all these other solutions, 1, 3, 4, and 5, are more or less good solutions, and you have to decide which one to take. You can only rule out solution 2. Normally, the solutions 3 or 4 are taken. The square root function and the power function, you all know that them. But there are also some cases where the other two extremes, the square root constant or the complex polynomial root calculator class, may be appropriate. When you need all those sophisticated features of this class, you of course you need it. So then there's no other choice. On the other hand, if you are programming for a microcontroller with a limited resource amount, then maybe you should stick with the constant and even don't implement the functions. So everything here is okay. Typically, you have to decide where is a suitable compromise for my concrete solution. The advantage you get from thinking in principles here is that you have a rough framework, or a reasoning framework, let's say, for thinking about it and communicating with others about what is the best solution. So it's not that you can mathematically prove this is the best solution, but it's rather a tool for communication and thinking. Next we go to principal languages, because the question which arises next is how to find suitable principles. In the last example, we've had a look at KISS and GP, some pre-selected principles, but how to come up with them, how to know which aspects to consider in a certain design situation. And there I came up with the notion of a principle language, which is somehow connected to pattern languages, which you might know. A pattern language interconnects patterns, and a principle language interconnects principles. So there are several relations between the principles. You see the KISS principle at the top here, and it's connected to the GP principle I've showed you with a contrary relationship. So you cannot have both, but you need to find a compromise, because there's some trade-off relationship between them. There are also some other relationships. You can have generalizations of principles and complementary principles, and maybe I, when I have time, I can talk about that in the end a bit more in depth. But first of all, just see it as a set of principles which is interconnected, and one principle leads to several other principles which you might consider in your situation now. Let's make an example, and we already have one or had one at the beginning, the library program, with the really, really bad idea. And we now have a look why this was a bad idea. This is a rather complicated example here. I'll show you the steps how to traverse the principle language, what to think at which step. It takes a little time to present that, but if you are used to thinking that way, it's just a matter of a glimpse at a poster or just have a look at the graph. It's the procedure is not meant to be a heavyweight thing which hampers you, but rather a way of thinking, a way of how to get to those aspects I should consider in this situation. So let's start. The first thing to do is to select a starting principle. In this case, it's a bit more complicated. If you have an easy case, for example, would be if you are reasoning about code duplication, you clearly want to start with the dry principle, because that's obviously exactly about duplication. There are other principles which pop into your mind directly when you hear a design situation which fits them. Here it's a bit more complicated, but you can see everything what's done here is a matter of module communication. How the classes communicate among each other. And you see here that the orange principles are about module communication, so an obvious starting principle is one of those three. I'll start with LC, which is low coupling. Module or a system should be loosely coupled to other modules. This is the first principle we'll consider here, and you see that it's interconnected with several other principles. then we would have a look at the other principles. For example, the KISS principle. You can say, is this solution a simple or a complex one? Is this an aspect I want to consider? Okay, we can consider it here. There are others which don't really fit that well in here. For example, information hiding, encapsulation. Okay, you can construct some relationship here in general. In the concrete situation we're in now, it doesn't help really much, so we leave that out for a moment. We'll consider these principles which are related, and we'll come up with those which are handy right now. Then we can continue doing so. We can examine the next few principles and see if they fit to our concrete solution or problem, and see, okay, ML, Murphy's Law, for example, over here is a principle which is helpful, and work our way like that through the principle language, and the result is a set of characterizing principles which show aspects to consider. As this is just meant as a tool and not as a formal method, you can always say, okay, I know enough now, so I'll abort that and stop considering other principles. It's meant as a way of thinking. For the sake of the example, we can continue to think about the other principles, but anyway, this wouldn't result in any new principles to consider, so this is the result. Let's have a look at the principles. There's low coupling. Low coupling says this is a bad idea. Why does it say that? The fact that the global system class is globally accessible and all classes can reach into any other class couples these classes together. There is some knowledge about remote system parts in classes which normally shouldn't know those other parts. So this increases the coupling, and LC says this is a bad idea. The KISS principle, on the other hand, says, okay, simple is better, and this is a simple way to access other parts of the system, so KISS is in favor for this example, for this solution. There's the rule of explicitness, which says that an explicit solution is better than an implicit one. Here in the example, you see that the dependencies between the classes are not explicitly stated in the interface of a class. It's rather an implicit possibility to reach into any other object, and this makes the solution rather implicit, and the ROI principle says this is a bad idea. There's tell don't ask information expert, which is another principle, and says you shouldn't ask other parts of the system for their information or for their inner aggregates. So this is the key idea of the solution. It's system, give me your system part, and system part, give me your part, and then I can access the other method on some remote part of the system. This is a violation of tell, don't ask information expert. In the end, we can think of Murphy's Law, which we've talked about at the very beginning, and I haven't found any possibility for many failures here, for many additional failures at least. So Murphy's Law doesn't have anything against the solution, let's put it that way. As you can see from the slide, it's not a clear answer which we can get here. So the idea of principles and principle languages doesn't make thinking about it obsolete. It just points out these are the aspects you should consider. And here in this very specific aspect, situation, you can think that low coupling and explicitness are more important to me than a simple solution. So by this reasoning, we can say that the solution is I've showed you is not the best solution, and we should maybe think about some better solution. But with what is better? That's the question we would have to consider next. In the end, we might come up with a solution called dependency injection. If you ever get to read Nick Hodges' blog, which I can recommend, you read about dependency injection quite much. It's a bit too much to present that in this talk here. It would be enough material for yet another talk. Maybe I'll put the link to Nick Hodges' blog in the talk notes I promised. So let's leave that example aside and proceed with the wiki, with the principles wiki. I think this should be possible to show you the principles wiki life. Okay, can you see that? That's good. This is principleswiki.net, the wiki I've created. You can see here in principles that there are already some principles explained. Some of them are explained in detail. Some of them aren't. This is one of the not very well documented principles. You see there are many headlines, but not very much text. But there are also some which are explained in much more detail. You see here Murphy's Law, which I've talked about at the beginning of this presentation. You can see there's the principle statement I've also had on the slides, a description which is a bit more detailed, a rationale why this principle is valid and why it should be followed. There are strategies which are some further idea here. It's a way to refactor or change your system in a way that it adheres better to the principle here. There are caveats what to think about when applying the principle, and what can be problematic, an origin, evidence, what do we know about, maybe there are some scientific research papers about it, or I don't know. And then in the relations to other principles, you see those relations I've talked about, the other principles which are connected to it, with some short explanation why there's the connection, and what to think about when traversing the principle language in this direction, when to when this relation should be considered. There's the principle language. Maybe there are also some other principle collections, as I call them. In the end, you see some examples for the principle, also the date example I've showed you, and you may also find some more or less helpful links to the outside world, to the internet, where your other helpful information may hide. So this is basically how the principles are described in the wiki. You can see there are also sections for patterns and anti-patterns and refactorings and I don't know. This is mostly work in progress. Principles is what is described in most detail, and as I have time, or maybe someone wants to contribute, then it proceeds a bit, but it just takes a little time to write and think about all that stuff. This is the principles wiki, and now we can switch back to the presentation and have a look at the advantages. What do I think that makes thinking about principles and principle languages a good and helpful idea? In the end, I think there are three main reasons for using principles and principle languages. First of all, it's learning design. It helps you to learn which aspects to consider. Secondly, it helps actually making the design decisions, and shows you consider this and that principle or aspect, and how to reason about your decisions. And lastly, it's a way of communication. Every aspect gets a name, and when something has a name, it can be communicated more easily. That's simply the same idea with patterns. Patterns are solution schemes which carry a name. Principles are solution reasons which carry a name. Let's see that in a bit more detail. How to learn design with principles and principle languages. Think of the following situation. There's Charlie, the apprentice, and he wants to learn how to design good software. And then there's Dave, the senior developer, who is really proficient in what he does, but sometimes he has a problem communicating his thoughts. He's experienced, he uses his experience, but it's sometimes difficult to explain what experience means and to teach his experience other people. So if you could just say, okay, if you want to learn design, just gain some experience, then Charlie wouldn't be helped that much by that. So another possibility would be, okay, if you want to learn design, just have a look at those principles. These tell you the aspects to consider when designing software. This doesn't make you a master designer right from the start, but it helps you gaining some knowledge which you normally have to learn by making a lot of failures. Okay, another another aspect is making design decisions. Consider Alice, who is a developer, and she has come up with a solution, but she doesn't really know if this solution is a good or a bad one. What she could do is just have a look at the principle language, because the principle language tells her which aspects to consider. So she can have a look at it and see, oh, I should consider this and this and this principle. Okay, in these aspects my solution is good, I can proceed. Lastly, communication. Maybe you've come across this situation. Dave, the senior developer, says your solution is bad. You don't should use a singleton here. And Alice just wants to know why. What's the reason for that judgment? Maybe Dave is right, but in order to understand Dave's opinion here, he should explain his reasons. When he just says, trust me, this is not really helpful for Alice. So the another possibility would be, okay, the principles ROI, LC, and SRP, and these principles tell you that this is a bad idea, then Alice can think about the solution and knows what Dave means here. So this is just giving names to reasons. Lastly, we can say that a principle language is also a language. It's a vocabulary for communication. That's what Dave does here. As a conclusion, we can say principles or rules of thumb are a form of experience you use, just like patterns are a form of experience reuse as they reuse solutions. Principles reuse reasons for solutions. Principles help you reasoning about design. The principle languages tell you which aspect to consider, and they form a kind of vocabulary. And there's also the principles wiki you might find interesting or not. What comes next? I continue working on the wiki slowly but continuously, so I'll add principles and maybe further principle languages, interconnect patterns with principles, because the principles are the reasons for using the patterns. So there's there are quite many possibilities for improvement, and it will slowly improve. Contributions are welcome. So that's it. Thank you very much. And do you have any questions? Actually, I have done that. Let me show you. This is the principal language again, and you see that there are that they are colored somehow. There are the black ones, which are general principles, modularization principles, which help you to break your system apart into several modules. Module communication principles, which tell about the how the module should communicate. Interface design principles, how to craft the interfaces, the methods and parameters and stuff like that. And the green ones are the inner module design principles, which tell you how a module, a class, for example, should be structured on its own. So there is some kind of categorization, and as you've said, this helps you to help a finding starting principle here. When you don't know which principle to start with, just have a look at the categories here. But I also have to say, if you want to follow this this approach, then you should at least have an idea of what all these principles, 19 are there, I think, are about, and what they mean. A part of the work on the principal language was to select a suitable subset of principles, because there are literally dozens or maybe hundreds of principles, and it's better to have 19 than to have 300. Okay, first of all, you could say just get an overview about all those 19 principles. But if you want to limit yourself to just a few ones, I would suggest low coupling, high cohesion, which are really, really helpful and important principles here. Then, of course, the KISS principle, dry generalization principle, and maybe Murphy's law, and information hiding encapsulation. Okay, these are already I don't know, half of the principal language. But the fact is that there are very many aspects you need to consider. You cannot say, okay, I only consider low coupling and forget high cohesion. This won't help you. So in order to get a, let's say, minimal set, in my opinion, you need low coupling, high cohesion, something about simplicity, something about generality, something about information hiding, and then you've got at least a rough framework for the different areas of where principles are, and the other principles will help you to get even more insight in that. Actually, my final solution was to abandon the project, because, but that's not quite all right. I have written the software for my school. I'm out of school for several years now. I finished university, so school is over, university is over. I haven't anything to do with the program anymore. I don't even know if it's still in use. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. But certainly nobody will maintain it. So it's just a example to scare people off currently. But if you would want to refactor the system or to make a system with the same requirements starting over again, you would probably use dependency injection, I've told you. In a nutshell, this means that the classes get a reference to the dependent objects either in the constructor or by having them reference them as a property. So in this case, you can change the wiring of the objects by just putting other references into the constructor call or by setting the properties. And this is much more loosely coupled, of course. It's also a bit more complicated. So KISS would say it's not that good, but loose coupling would say it's much better. And depending on their also frameworks like Spring, they are they make it a bit more implicit. But if you do it by hand, it's really, really explicitly saying this object references that one. So the rule of explicitness would also say this is better. That's a good question. It depends. This is a principal language which is meant to be generally applicable. It's a general purpose principal language, just as the Goff book, for example, the Gang of Four. You probably know this patterns book lists 23 patterns which are meant to be generally applicable. Of course, you can think of other principal language, and that's also what I plan to do, to construct principal languages for other abstraction layers like architecture or more into coding or interface design or user interface design or I don't know, there are several possibilities. Then you said that other teams or other developers might choose other principles. That's also true. But in my opinion, it's the difference is rather the weighting of the principles. Some people say dry is the principle which is the most important one, and nothing is above dry, and you should avoid duplication at all cost. But of course, dry also has some disadvantages. For example, it normally creates some additional complexity. So you see this little one here, which means it's contrary to KISS. So a problem of dry is that it creates complexity and makes the solution less simple. Other developers may say, okay, dry is really, really important principle, but I think in some cases KISS is a tiny bit more important, or low coupling is a tiny bit more important. So there's the weighting of the principles, which largely differ between the between certain developers or teams. And if you keep an eye on that, you will realize that you can judge other people's thinking by figuring out which principles they prefer over which others. And the last aspect I want to point out is that, of course, there are other principles which are not in the 19 principle language here. And they, of course, add value, but they also come at the cost that you have to memorize them, that you have to look them up or think about them. That's why the wiki lists all the principles I found, and not yet all, but they will increase. And so the other principles are also helpful. Sometimes here the principles are just supersets of the other principles, which are a bit more specialized. So, okay, you may say, I think principle ABC is also helpful. I consider it additionally to the 19 principles here, of course. I haven't yet, but of course that's that would be another principle language. It would be helpful to have a principle language which is which concentrates on how to make a system performant. This principle language here is rather focused on maintainability. And in the future, there may be principle languages for other non-functional requirements, just as you said, performance or security, availability, or I don't know. You can envision principle languages for pretty much everything, but that's just the start here. So currently, no, there are no principles in the wiki which are concerned with performance yet, but certainly I plan to include them. If you have any principles, let me know. This would be very, very interesting. Good point. That's why the principles don't make the decision for you. They just tell you you have to make a trade-off between generality and simplicity. And this is also just a for the sake of the example, just limiting it to two principles. You can say, okay, I want to consider another principle, a performance-related principle here. And then this points to another aspect to consider. Then you have to make the decision. The principles don't tell you how to make it, they just tell you which aspects you should consider. So yes, you're right. This is a reason for taking the constant solution.